Hello, welcome to Good Games Well Played, episode 150. I'm Clint, aka JCM. With us this week is Izzy.
Yo.
Unfortunately, Izzy is not feeling well, so he will not be here. Which is unfortunate, too, because we had the Nintendo Direct this week, which really was kind of a partner showcase, nothing major from Nintendo necessarily, but they showed off Grounded and Pentiment. Grounded actually got a trailer. Pentiment was just like in a scissor reel, so this is kind of like, okay, this is why these two games make sense why they didn't talk about them at that Xbox podcast, because like they already were partnering with Nintendo to do it. Which, so it's like, okay,
yeah, well, I'm so excited about Grounded. But
Grounded, of course, will be coming to other platforms as well, not just Nintendo. But yeah, so that was there was a new Super Monkey Ball game that was announced coming in June. I know people are fans of that franchise. Some classic Rare games are coming. Epic Mickey Rebrushed, which is a remake of the 2010 Wii exclusive, that's coming out. Don't see exactly when. There's no date on here. Shin Megami Tensei 5 Vengeance is a revamped version of the 2021 Switch exclusive. It's coming out. I believe it's coming to other platforms as well. It's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, PC, not just Nintendo. There's a lot of stuff on here that was not exclusive to Nintendo, but just happened to be shown there. I mean, that's the case for a lot of third-party stuff. And then South Park Snow Day was announced, and a couple of things. Mother 3 is coming to Nintendo Switch Online, but only in Japan, which is interesting. I'm sure some people, I don't know if you can change your region for the Switch, but we'll see. I know everybody's been wanting that to come to the West. But yeah, nothing too crazy. Pretty straightforward. Endless Ocean Luminous is coming to Switch in May. This is apparently a game franchise that appeared on the Wii and is a scuba diving game adventure and the second sequel to the Endless Ocean franchise, following that game from 2010. So that'll be coming out May 2nd on the Switch. But yeah, you know, nothing too crazy. The Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection is also announced. It's coming to all platforms. I guess people are excited about that. I mean, it's kind of an old, I know it was super popular back in the day, but I don't know how many people are going to go back and play an online 64-player multiplayer game that's, you know, it'll have all the updates and DLC, but I don't know how it'll necessarily play present day. But who knows? Maybe it'll take off. But yeah, is there anything from the Direct? I don't know if you watched anything from there. Again, it was very third party, so nothing.
No, I mean, I watched. I'm excited most about the games that aren't Nintendo exclusives. I mean, Pentiment looks interesting, but the big one for me was Grounded, and I'll probably get that on PlayStation. But it was still kind of exciting for Nintendo, because I could see a world where that would be a really fun Wii travel game or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The next, we have an update for Dying Light 2. That came out on the couple days ago, basically adding guns to the game. So there weren't any guns really in. There's a crossbow that you can get, but it was only through one like upgrade path. And I think it was only if you sided with the police force of the game, because like there's two different paths depending on who you kind of, which faction you helped. Interesting idea, but it did kind of suck that it locked certain aspects of the game behind joining one or the other. But it was very much like, do you like parkour? Go this path. Do you like traps and other stuff, then go this path, which is interesting. But they are adding guns. Apparently won't change up the game loop too much, so it's like it won't alter, which I never really felt like the guns in the first game did that much. It was just like, oh, it was a kind of a nice to have, especially the shotgun. But
the shotgun was super nice to have and kind of changed up like your oh shit moments. Mm-hmm. And then I almost feel like the crossbow changed more. Not the crossbow. Yeah.
Was there a... Oh, that was in the DLC, right?
Yeah, that was in the DLC. I feel like that changed more than anything else. Basically, like, anything that gives you a silent kill is kind of like a game changer.
Yeah. And, I'm interested. The Reloaded Edition is the one that's going to come out. I think it has improved visuals as well. I believe the update will also get upgraded for free, so I'm not sure how much the visuals will improve on the console platforms. I'll be curious to see if Digital Foundry does the thing, but I am interested now, like, oh, hey, if I do a replay or if we finally end up playing it together, then it's like the guns will be, yeah, I mean, it'll be new to me, but it won't be new to you because you didn't play the base game.
So it would be the perfect time to finally play through it.
Yeah, it is a fun game. I don't know if it has crossplay support. Not that I'd want to. Not that I'm going to rebuy it or anything, but I'm curious if it does. But yeah, that'd be fun. I'd like to go back, because then it would be, it's a nice way to kind of replay something fresh, be like, oh, there's, you know, new stuff here, and get to experience all that. But and then Sony came out and showed some new PSVR 2 games in a blog post. But in the blog post leading up to it, they did also say, we're pleased to share that we are currently testing the ability for PSVR 2 players to access additional games on PC to offer even more variety in addition to the PSVR 2 titles available through PlayStation 5. So it sounds like they're working on PC support. I'm really curious how quickly that'll happen. It makes total sense. I mean, this is something that should have happened in with the original PSVR to not be siloed, because I feel like the games that really take off on VR are the PC ones that can be played on multiple different headsets. Obviously, Meta is very much, they like doing exclusives and whatnot, but I feel like the big games are stuff you can play on everything. So if that happens, and that de facto makes it to where you could play Half-Life Alyx on the PSVR 2, that's going to be great. So hopefully they'll be able to finalize something soon on that, but we'll see. I'm excited. And then we had the Baldur's Gate devs coming out saying they're working on official mod support plan, including for consoles, which will be nice. So they're basically saying, you know, hey, we have a system, but it needs to be tested out and still requires some works. You know, we're excited about it, yada, yada, this and that. And it kind of makes sense, because even on some of the popular mods that were for like Divinity Original Sin 2 came to the console versions as like just little additions you can check on and off. You didn't have to actually download them. They were just there in the main menu. So stuff that would like, you know, hey, put the respec mirror in Act 1, so you didn't have to wait to Act 2 to actually be able to respec. So nice little touches like that. Some other things as well. Like if someone has speak to animals, everybody has speak to animals. So you didn't have to worry about, or Pet Pal.
That's pretty nice.
Yeah, which is, of course, if you turn any of these on, it disables trophies. But it was like, just these, yeah. If you're going to replay the game, it's like little quality of life things. That was always the one thing I'm like, okay, even in Baldur's Gate, it's like, all right, I want to talk to animals, but I got to make sure I put on, you know, speak to animals with this person, make sure this person does the talking, or make sure if they run into an area, it's my main character or who I'm controlling. That way they get into the conversation first, because I've had too many times where like on my replay where someone initiates the conversation with, you know, like the owlbear or something. And then it's like, oh, they don't have speak to animals on. So because it triggered the wrong person like that, that always kind of annoyed me. I wish that game made it to where if the party, like obviously there's a, like an area of effect that once you cross triggers a cutscene. But I wish then it's like, okay, it kind of like Venn diagrammed it to where, okay, a character crosses that threshold. Now do another circle around that character, and any if the main person you're controlling is in that circle, then make them be the conversation leader. Like if we're, you know, if the party's split and they're across the way, I get it. But it's like if I'm running in a team and one person, like because of pathing, triggers the conversation with an NPC because they happen to walk into that trigger point, like don't make it talk to them. And like they don't have the dialogue skills. But yeah, so
I'm pretty excited for the mod support. I'm really curious. Mod support on consoles is always like an interesting concept to me, and I would love for Baldur's Gate 3 to implement it well on consoles, but I know that the consoles just have so many limitations with how you provide mod support. Like, you know, mods have to be officially approved, or they might potentially jailbreak consoles, or, you know, it adds DLC features for free. Like, there are so many things that aren't allowed when you go to the console space for mods. And I know Fallout tried it on Xbox to somewhat limited success, but it would be really cool if Baldur's Gate was able to actually like do it well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you figure if they got the systems built in there for cross play, cross save, it's like, okay, you got to build on that backbone to be able to add the mod support and just put it in properly. So, cause it's, you know, obviously huge modding community on PC for Baldur's Gate. So I'll be curious to see, yeah, how quickly to do it, what level of mods, like will any character visual mods kind of come in, or is it just like, I'm trying to think for like Skyrim or Fallout on consoles, how they get some, you know, mod support was like, okay, you pick which ones you want to download. And a lot of those are visual enhancements, or for Fallout, when I replayed that, it's like, okay, you can download certain, again, it was really just kind of visual packs, some other minor things. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see which ones are supported. Because then that way it kind of homogenizes the experience where it's like, okay, I'm playing on PC. I want to go play on console or something. in a location is like, okay, I could still use all the mods I've been using, especially if they're quality of life. I imagine all those should be pretty easy, but I'm curious about mainly the cosmetic ones or like the bigger party mods, stuff like that. Like, will having too big of a party on console, you know, make it a little rough performance wise, but we'll see. And then there was so the trailer for the Shadow of the Erdtree came out this week, about a 3-minute trailer. Vaadi has like a hour long video on it. I'm not going to watch it, but he has it. But one of the interesting, they had a interview with Miyazaki. I forget if he was talking directly to IGN. Yes, IGN's own interview with Miyazaki. I think multiple people probably interviewed him. But one of the questions was about Bloodborne and remake. And they, you know, said, you know, talking about, hey, a lot of fans have been really wanting a remake. And they say here that he acknowledges it and it makes him very happy to see fans passionate about Bloodborne and this and that. But he does say in that interview, saying, quote, "I think having new hardware is definitely a part of what gives these remakes value. Things you weren't able to achieve on previous generations of hardware, ways you weren't able to render specific expressions sometimes makes it possible. However, I wouldn't say that's the be-all, end-all. I think purely from a user perspective, modern hardware also allows more players to appreciate all the games, and also it ends up being a simple reason. But as a fellow player, I think that accessibility is important. I think you can that can be the driving force between bringing an old game to a new platform." But end quote. So I'm curious if it's like, will it be a Demon's Souls situation where Demon's Souls is PS3, launch title on PS5 by Bluepoint, Bloodborne PS4, could the remake be a launch title on the PS6 by Bluepoint?
That would kind of make sense. I could see that. It could also be, I was going to say the rumored, you know, PS5 Slim stuff, but maybe that's not actually it. It didn't seem like he was against Bloodborne being remade. So, yeah, if they did for PS6, it would align with Demon's Souls, a track, and it's obviously a really popular game and would probably be a seller.
Yeah, I mean, does Sony own the Bloodborne IP because they work together?
I think
or is it just...
No, yeah, because that's why it never came to other things. It's not the same relationship as Demon's Souls. I want to say that...
Yeah, they own the IP. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, because Demon's Souls, they just published in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Namco did it in everywhere else, which was like, because they didn't think it would do well in the U.S. and other countries. But I could see that, yeah, like, I mean, the success, the excitement and success, I believe, of, like, I don't know what the numbers are for the Demon's Souls remake, but that one made sense because, you know, obviously, you look at Demon's Souls on PS3, it's like, yeah, that benefited a lot. Demon's Souls remake looks fantastic on PlayStation 5, even at the performance mode, still looks really good. I love the way that game looks. But yeah, I could see, yeah, maybe do like a, like, obviously don't, the leap from 4 to 5 might not be great enough, but it's like, yeah, whatever you're doing for 6, it could be a big seller. So that'd be exciting. I'd be curious if Bluepoint's working on that.
That would be exciting. I would enjoy that.
Yep. That would be fantastic. And then Helldivers got a couple patches this week. I know one of them kicks AFK players. That was a big problem on like PC where people are just leaving their characters logged in. So then no one else could join because of the queue. So they finally added an idle timer. It's like, which is so funny because that's such an MMO thing to do. But there's just so many people playing that it's like, we need to do this. So that's
it. I feel like that's just the live service thing now. Like people used to do that with Destiny where they would like rubber band it so they ran in circles and stuff, and it's like, yeah, that's just classic MMO things.
Yeah, I feel like though, like, I don't remember Destiny ever having super long queues or servers at capacity the way, you know, Helldivers 2 has, you know, had. Like I've only ever experienced that on FF14 where it's like, okay, new expansion came out, busy day, I'm trying to log in, there's a queue, I gotta wait, yada yada. And they did bump up their server's capacity to be 700,000, and I don't think they ran into any capacity issues this week. And so hopefully that's like the what they needed to do to alleviate that that constraint. So, but I'm curious then how many more people are going to buy the game now that they're actually able to play it. It's so funny that it has mixed reviews on Steam. Like, do you not pay attention to the news? Like, like, clearly, you know the game's popular. That's why you try to go get it. But, like, I can't play it. I'm just stuck in the menu. You're like, do you not know that the game is having, it's so popular, it's having capacity problems? Like, that's not, it's like, come on, man.
I kind of want to get the game.
It's like I would have loved to have gotten it and to get it if I had time to play. Like I talked about with Zaya, I don't know if you were on that episode, but where it's like just being able to like, if we could just set a day to all play multiplayer stuff together, be like, okay, let's on this day, this is the day we're going to do it, you know, for an hour, 2 hours, whatever, like we'll always have this day for multiplayer. We'll set, or maybe like a flexible 2 days or something like that. Be like, if we can't do it this day, we'll do it the next day. Like if I could set that, like we had that stretch there when we were playing Diablo 4, where it seemed like we were able to play quite a bit. But yeah, if I was able to have like actual time or could set time, like it would be fun to play. But then it's like a game where, you know, you don't really want to play solo. You can obviously queue up with randos, but I feel like three players is kind of like a sweet spot. So it's like, okay, could I get my cousin to get it? But then even his playtime's kind of weird. And then you're like, you don't want to have two people with kids trying to get in there. I feel like that'd be tough. But yeah, it'd be like, I wouldn't mind playing it if I could consistently play it. Because I mean, I've talked about it before. There's so many multiplayer games I would love to keep playing. Like, I'd love to still play Apex, hop into Rainbow Six Siege randomly, like, if I had the people to do it with. But it's like, yeah, it's finding that time, you know.
It's the eternal dilemma.
Yeah.
In a weird way, this sounds horrible, but, like, the best time I would love to play is, like, middle of the day on some days now, because I work from home 4 days a week. And like, you know, Lord knows I would take a 2 hour break over lunch or something to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's like that could kind of work. Like if I timed it around when the toddler took his nap,
right.
He'll nap for like an hour to 2 hours. So it's like if you were flexible, like, hey, anywhere between like, you know, 12 and 3, at some point he'll fall asleep, you know, hypothetically, and if I'm available, then we can just like hop on, like if you had that kind of flexibility on a Sunday afternoon or something. But or just like take like a, like what days do you work? You said you work 4 days, so what days do you?
Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The only day I have to go in is Tuesdays.
Oh, you go in? Okay, so you go in on Tuesday. Okay.
Yeah, and honestly, like, it's, you have the occasional meetings and things, but I'm like, man, maybe it, find a middle of the day thing and we'll all just be bad employees, play for a few hours.
Or just take like a long lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
Like do an hour lunch. Like, hey, like I could depend on.
I mean, I get an hour lunch every day, but like if you do like just, hour and a half, 2 hour lunch, whatever, randomly.
Yeah, that'd be funny. Yeah, I just make sure you're like offline or whatever. But yeah.
I don't know. Helldivers seems fun. What other game was coming out soon? There's another co-op one coming out soon.
Another co-op? Well, I know. Well, Nightingale's obviously in early access, but we're gonna talk about that in a sec. But I don't know about any other co-op. I know Sea of Thieves. That was another thing we didn't get to. That's a co-op game. That's gonna be coming out to PlayStation. let me see. Just to keep our conversation going with the other Kansas City. God, where is it? April 30th is when Sea of Thieves comes out on PlayStation. I don't see. Hi-Fi Rush is on March 19th. That'll be on the PlayStation and Switch on the April 16th.
Mm-hmm.
But where's Grounded? I don't see Grounded. When does Grounded come out? It just says, I think, guess maybe whenever it comes out on Nintendo is when it comes out on PlayStation. If it's coming on PlayStation. Anyways, I gotta look at that, but I'm trying to think what other co-op games come out later this year, because like I said, Nightingale's in early access, but 1.0 of Sons of Forest is out, but I don't know when the console release of that is going to be. I don't know. I can't think of any other co-op games that let's see.
You know, it'll come to me later.
Games 2024. yeah, because like a lot of games I'm looking at are all, I mean, obviously not Suicide Squad, but not a lot of single player stuff like Star Wars Outlaws. Oh, you're thinking of Foam Stars.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's definitely what I'm thinking of. Absolutely.
No, yeah. Yep, Foam Stars for sure. But there's like a lot of single player stuff coming out. And then of course, Pacific Drive came out. That was one that I think that came out. Was it this week or end of last week?
I think it came, well, I don't know, because it came out early to streamers, and I only knew it came out because I was watching streamers, so whenever.
Yeah, I think it came out on Thursday. Early. Yeah, that's a new release that came out. Skull and Bones also came out recently. I think that might have been on maybe the 6th, that might have been the week prior, the Friday of before last podcast. We didn't really talk about that, but I know that's been kind of not reviewing too well. But I'm just trying to think of like new games that came out recently. But yeah, and then of course Nightingale's in early access. That is a co-op game. That's a game I'm interested to play, but right now I'm kind of going to wait until they get further along. But they did say, it was funny, like, so the devs came out in a update post on Steam. Inflection, the developer, said here, you know, we're now prioritizing and developing an offline mode that we plan to release as soon as feasible. Our vision for the game since inception was to create an interconnected series of realms with the idea of allowing for cooperative exploration in mind, a universe bigger than a single realm or server. That meant we had made a choice early in development between supporting co-op from day one or focusing development on an offline mode. Looking back at the decision, we misjudged what some of you were looking for in your experience. The gameplay loops in Nightingale look flexible, engrossing. Oh, this is the part from the room. But they're just saying, like, we're working on it. We're kind of surprised, you know, people wanted it. I'm like, well, everybody kind of always wants an offline mode, but it should just have.
I mean, with, you know, everything that's happening of, like, you know, games being retracted, things like that, like, everyone wants offline. Of course they do.
Yeah, obviously. It's like, yeah, don't just make it seamlessly co-op. Because, like, yeah, I guess I'm trying to think of, like, right now it's only on PC. You have to download it. There's no physical copy. So you have the internet. So I'm curious.
I mean, you have to download it, but do you always want to stay connected on your PC? Some people have shitty internet, so, like, downloading isn't necessarily as much of a problem as maintaining a stable connection. So, like, they could download, and it might stop occasionally because they have shitty internet, but that's not the same as, like, a strong connection.
Yeah, there should be, like, yeah, and then people, of course, like the Steam Deck now, so it's like, okay, is it Steam Deck compatible? Yeah. Are people playing on that on the airplane? Yada, yada. They don't want to have to play online. Yeah, it'd be nice if there was, like, a, you know, when I'm at work, like, I log into, like, a VPN and whatnot, because, you know, I work from home, and sometimes the connection might drop, like, maybe there's a weird signal thing, and it'll say, like, reconnecting, and it auto-reconnects, and it'll be, everything's fine, like, I still work on all my files, and then everything just reconnects, like, I'm surprised, I'm curious how much is happening in the background, like, if a user's internet lags out, like, especially in that, like, how much of it is local hosting to where it's like, okay, you can keep doing what you're doing, and then it'll kind of update the server because it needs to update for other players and what have you. I'd be curious about. But I mean, like, if you pitch it from the start, like, hey, as long as you communicate, you know, because, like, MMOs obviously aren't single player, but it's like, if you're saying it from the get-go, it's like, that's fine. As long as people know, then the people that join understand that, and then you work on it. I think it's fine to work on it after the fact, but it's like, it should be a case of, you should kind of read the room and know people kind of want an offline mode. I don't mind if a game has co-op and I can join it, you know, and there's other people. It kind of depends too. Like, is it PvE? Like, that's kind of a situation that,
you know, I can, like, at least appreciate that they acknowledged it. And they basically just said, we made a stupid decision, not even stupid. Like, they made a decision. It's a pretty non-confrontational response, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, it's just a creative decision that they did from the start. They said, hey, we want to make it co-op, and so we're going to focus on this. And yeah, we're looking at adding an offline mode. So, and I was curious about trying early access, but I've heard, like, it's kind of, the early access right now isn't too great, like a little too grindy. So I don't think I'll be jumping into EA right now. Not that I like jumping into early access all the time, but yeah, same for, like, you know, I was interested in Pacific Drive, and I hear, even though that's not an early access, it's like full release, but I'm thinking about waiting until that game hits more like a, not a 2.0, but maybe a couple updates, because the reviews I saw say it is kind of grindy, and a lot of systems you're juggling can make it really frustrating. God, but
that game looks so close to something I would love. Like, I feel with a few updates, that game could be really, really fun. It seems ridiculous, and I think the gameplay loop is super cool. Right now, I think it would drive me fucking nuts with, like, how janky it is. But, like, man, that's one of those games where I'm like, make a note of it, come back to it in like 6 months and see where it's at.
Yeah, because, like, there, it does everything I love about, which I'm hoping the Forever Skies does. That's the gameplay loop I love from, like, Subnautica, where it's like, you have to go out, get resources to improve your vehicle, so you can go out further to get more resources and explore to improve your vehicle to go out even further, which is what Subnautica is. It's, you go out, you swim, you build a vehicle that lets you explore a little faster, to build the vehicle that lets you explore a little deeper, to find resources, to build a vehicle or mods to make your vehicle go further. And, like, I love that loop. Like, it's, it's the inverse of making your character stronger through skill points. It's like, it's, you need to explore to go to upgrade, to explore further. I love that gameplay loop. So, and that seems like what this does. It just has extra stuff in it that it seems like some, the extra systems on top. I'm like, okay, I'll wait, which, and then it goes back to that thing, that issue you have where like, I will play this game at some point, but it's like, if I don't play it quick enough, how many other people are doing the same thing? And then it means they don't get enough money up front. Yada,
I know.
Yada. But
I also kind of worry if this is going to be one of those games that like the popularity dies off really quick. Like people love it for like 2 weeks and then it's just gone and you never hear about it.
But it's also a single player game too. So it's like, it's not like it should have legs. Like when people go like, oh, look how much, you know, this game fell off on Steam. It's like, yeah, it's a single player game. It's going to drop off. It's not a live service. What do you expect?
I think the reason it would like concern me for a game like this is because I feel like this game does need updates to make it better. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, single player games that are in a good position that die off quickly on Steam, not always a big deal if they come out in a great condition and the game is like good already. If a game needs the support to become better and then it dies off, sometimes I feel like it never actually gets that support.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a passion project game, like then it kind of can, but there's definitely like a fine line between gets enough support to continue going and, you know, does not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I'll be curious to see how long they'll be able. I mean, imagine they'll at least plan to have a couple updates, especially based on character feedback. And then because it's PC, is it PC only or is it available on consoles as well?
I think it's PC console, only right now. Double check
Wikipedia.
That.
No, it's on PlayStation 5 as well. Yeah, that's right, because it was revealed at a Sony showcase. That's where we first saw it. But yeah, it is on PS5. But yeah, at least they'll be able to update, you know, get updates out pretty quick on PC. So it'll be curious to see what the player... And you also kind of want that player base to be big enough to where you can address some of those issues that people have. Because typically, if you don't have people playing it to comment on them, then how are you going to know what to update? Unless they have those kind of back-end monitoring for this. Oh, players seem to be getting stuck on... you know, XYZ, or this system, it seems to slow players down, you know, this and that, if they do that kind of back-end monitoring. But yeah, that's like on my to-play list of games. But yeah, I think that's it for games. I took a bunch of podcast notes. A lot of them are just stuff that I'm going to talk about. But I did see, before we jump into what we've been playing, I saw an article about, or not an article, sorry, it was a Reddit post for someone who... So, like, big spoilers for Baldur's Gate 3. I'll put in the timestamps just for a couple minutes. They lost their honor mode in Baldur's Gate 3, but they lost... So, they played the game. They played it before, so they're doing their honor mode run. And the first time I played it, it was before that, you know, end... that patch they did that gives you that after party a couple months later. So they're playing the game. They choose to become, because they're doing honor mode, they go with Gale to blow up the brain. But that's the plan. But Orpheus still wants you to, like, you know, hey, we got to do this. We still want to have a backup plan, even though that's what you want to do. So it's like someone's got to be a mind flayer. So they chose their Tav to be the mind flayer. So then, you know, they blow up the mother brain.
Oh, no.
Everything goes well. So then they do the cutscene on the dock. Then it goes to the after party. And the after party isn't just a cutscene. Like, you can walk around in the camp and talk to people. So the player, they go around, they talk to all their people. Then they talk, like, to their romantic partner from the game. And then the narrator says, like, oh, you're overwhelmed by hunger. You know, because they're a mind flayer. And it has them do a check. And, you know, a skill check to see if they can resist eating their partner's brain. They fail, but they didn't use any inspiration because they're like, oh, that's fine. You know, I already beat the game. I got the trophy for honor mode. It'll pop up. So they fail the check. They thought nothing of it. They end up eating the person's brain. They thought, oh, that's kind of funny. And typically, I guess in that after party, like if you try to get into a fight with it, like you attack anybody, I think Withers is supposed to like just banish you. Like
Withers, yeah, he like stops you, or God, what does he do? He either banishes everyone that's getting in a fight, or he like kills them, or like displays some huge power to just stop the fight. And you're like, well, yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. So he thought like, oh, that'll happen because he's like, oh, I'll be fine. So he does that. Instantly, everyone in camp turned on him because he attacked the romantic partner. He can't react quick enough. They bind him with like, you know, holding some kind of spell, and they just all nuke him down and they die. And then they're like, they try to like control delete to get out of there, but the screen already popped up saying, you know, that you failed your honor mode run. So they lost their honor mode run in the post game camp party.
God, it's like a kind of you deserve it, but it's also kind of funny.
It is hilarious.
I would be furious.
Yeah, but God, it's so good. Oh yeah, I thought that was great. But yeah, I'll put time spoiler timestamps in there. But I thought that was so funny when I saw that on Reddit. It's like, oh man, I gotta talk about this. but yeah. All right, well, we can go ahead and jump into what we've been playing. I don't know. Have you been playing much this week? I know you finished the Mario RPG remake last time we talked.
Yeah, I finished Super Mario RPG last time. I haven't dove into anything kind of new because, well, I downloaded the Final Fantasy VII demo and I tossed it in for like half an hour or something. And I'm going through that. Like, I'm really torn on whether or not I want to play Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or not. Mostly because of the semi-spoilers for reviews and demo commentary. But everyone keeps seeming to say that, like, the story is hot garbage, but the gameplay is fun. And I'm really just like, man, I like the story of Final Fantasy VII. Is the story hot garbage because people don't understand what it's going on, or have they just changed a ton of it? And I'm kind of like, I don't know if I want to go into it again because the first part one pissed me off so much.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, it's been getting some good reviews. And
it's getting really good reviews. It's getting like 93s and 94s. I think it has like a 93 on Metacritic right now.
Yeah, like Sam Claiborne from IGN called it like one of the best RPGs of all time, which is high praise from him because he doesn't like, he's not a big story person game, but it was just weird. And then when I hear, like, I was listening to Min-Max talk about it, and like some of the criticisms that I hear is that its open world is very like that basic kind of open world stuff, but people still like what they're doing in that open world. And I don't know if it's just the skin on the open world activities is fun versus if you were to do the same kind of thing in something like a Far Cry or an Assassin's Creed, where it seems like, oh, it's the usual Ubisoft open world activities. But like one person likes it because it, all the character stuff you get at like the end of the missions is fun. Like they like those kind of interactions. So I'm like, maybe that's what's pushing you to do it. And then the story criticisms I hear are like, you know, again, I'm not sure where it ends. You know, obviously in the first original game, it's a bit after City of the Ancients. It's not like right after that section, but it's like shortly after that. So I'm not saying it's what do they call it?
I have a guess at where it ends that may or may not. Well, it's a Final Fantasy VII spoiler, but like I have a guess at where it ends.
Well, there's like, you know, the big moment, obviously, and then that happens in City of the Ancients.
And that's what I'm thinking.
But it's in the original, it's shortly after that. I just forget what else you do after that. Like, so there's not a whole lot of, in the original one, there's not a whole lot of story between then, like when you leave Midgar and get up to like that. Like there are character beats and some story things, but there's nothing like major. So it's kind of like you're in. This game is like that mid chunk where you're kind of in the middle. You're running away from, you're trying to stop Sephiroth while being pursued by Shinra. And there's all these smaller things that happen between. It's all character driven. You do Red 13 stuff. Sure. And so it's like, I feel like that could be where it's like, because it's so much time between Remake, Intergrade, and this, it's like, okay, it just feel story wise can feel kind of empty. Like, I guess similar to like Mass Effect 2, right? But I've never played it before. I know like there's no real story there. The story there is saving the characters. It's all the characters for your crew. Like that's what you're doing.
Mass Effect 2, the story is basically that you're trying to reassemble the crew, which works quite well.
Yeah. So it's like if that's what you want, I can't type. Sorry, I was trying to type something. The So I guess I can understand that. So that's why I'm kind of curious. Like, you don't kind of get that. Some people complain, like, you don't get that breadcrumb of from single player games, like, oh, do a quest, do a, you know, mission, what have you. You get some story. Do a quest, do a mission, you get some story. It's like that feedback loop, like with, you know, like a God of War, a standard single player game, more linear, I guess. So it's like, I get that. But I am really curious about the open world stuff. Like, will that be fun?
You do bring up a good point, though, that in the original Final Fantasy VII, this would be the chunk of the game where, like, the world opens up. You're not linear anymore for the intro, and suddenly you can go anywhere and do anything. And then people spend 40 hours running around doing whatever the fuck they want in the open world, hunting material, like, doing whatever. So you bring up a good point that, like, this game is that chunk of the original, but I think it goes to speak to the, like, one of my main criticisms of the first part, and I think it was echoed by a lot of people, is they split one game up into three, so there's no narrative structure that works anymore. You don't have the intro and then, like, the build up to the climax and the resolution. You don't have all of that in one game. You have the first game, which is the intro, and then they try to ham fist like a climax and a resolution into the first game that doesn't work because you know there's more coming. And then you have this game, which would be the like exploration and build up part. And I can guess at what the climax is, but there's no resolution to this game, most likely. So you're never getting that payoff at the end. And then the final game, I'm just like, well, that's going to be your resolution, but the entire game is going to be resolution. So all the narrative beats and pacing just feel weird by splitting this up into three games. And I suspect that might be what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Like, yeah, is it going to be better if you were to play them back to back as a whole, similar to how it would be for the first game? Yeah, because then, again, yeah, like you said, the
but like that shouldn't be the expectation. If they're released 4 years apart or whatever, and they're sold as standalone games, the expectation to get the good experience shouldn't be that you have to play them back to back.
Yeah, that's true. Because they're split, like there should be more of a base, and maybe there is. It's just because of that big open worldness and all the side stuff, it doesn't feel that way. Because yeah, because when you think about the original, like it's okay, you get the flashback, which the game opens with for Cloud. And then you go to Fort Condor. There's a little cutscene there. You don't do the fight yet. That's not till later. But it's like you go there. You go to Junon. You leave from there. You take the boat. You go to Costa del Sol. Like there's all this other stuff, you know. So there's like little beats, but there's nothing like in the base game. Sephiroth just, I mean, he shows up a little bit, but like you fight Jenova on the boat, and you know this and that. But it's just like there's not. It's little moments. Like, obviously not big, huge story beats. Like, there's one, like, because when you leave Midgar and the OG ones, like, you just had a big moment in, you know, there. Yeah.
And the like, Sephiroth buildup is kind of like, it's not Sephiroth at the start. I'm already blanking on what those, like, little assistant dudes are called. But the, like, little cloaked figures. It, like, builds mystery and stuff. And then Sephiroth is kind of like the mid-game, mid to later game, just like kind of surprise, what the fuck kind of moment. And yeah, I you know, they already added Sephiroth way earlier in the first remake. And in this one, I don't know how he's going to play into it, but they've also obviously added other elements. So like spoilers for the end of last game, you know, they start hinting at alternate timelines. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be some new layer of story added in because of that. But I don't know how that plays into having an open world anymore. It just feels like it feels too complicated and like they wanted to make it too grand instead of like a tight experience. And I feel like what it really should have been for the remake is the entire story and just a really tight experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like I'll be curious to play it. Like, you know, it's like I said, if they say it's fun, you know, the one thing that did kind of concern me was someone did say that they felt like you couldn't just beeline the story. Like they felt like when they did that they kind of hit difficulty walls, and the game does have like a dynamic difficulty. I don't know exactly how it works, but yeah, because I'm like, I don't know how much of the XF stuff for Chadley or whatever I want to do, like how much, like I'll probably do exploration, but I know like typically in games that have massive explorations, like by the end I'm kind of like, all right, I was like that with Witcher 3. I'm like, okay, I'm done. Just do the story now. You know, FF16, I did a lot of it, but at the very end, like I kind of finished some major side characters quests. You know, that was my complaint there. It took so you couldn't complete a lot of those until like the very end of the game. And I did most of those, but there's kind of like, okay, I'm done doing a lot of the side stuff. Let's just finish the story. So yeah, I'll be curious to see how that goes, but comes out soon. So that's all you thought about doing was the demo. You didn't play anything else?
No, I haven't really played anything else. I'm kind of waiting to see. I'm reading more reviews on that and debating if I want to buy it. And then I'm still just kind of waiting for Dragon's Dogma 2 at this point.
Okay.
I have been tossing around. I never played the Horizon 2 DLC.
You should play that.
Yeah, so I was like, actually, I should just download, Burning Shores? I should download Burning Shores and play that, because that will be fun.
Yeah, Burning Shores, Alan Wake 2.
Forgetting about Alan Wake 2. Like, I own it and keep forgetting about it.
Gotta play it, man. That game's good. I know. You can probably beat that.
That's probably a quick one. Actually, that would be a great game to play.
Yeah, you could probably beat that pretty quick. I think that game is, probably like a 12-hour, 12, 15, depending on what you do. Like, I guess, like, you can beat that fairly quickly. and then maybe don't do New Game Plus to get, like, the stuff. Just, like, watch the cutscene, because, like, you don't need to do it. Unless you want to go, well, I guess you could do it to get the
There's a New Game trophies. Plus in Alan Wake? Does anything change?
Yeah, so there's, because, like, you know, we talked about this, like, the ending, it adds another ending. So, like, but it makes narrative sense, similar to how the New Game Plus in Starfield makes narrative sense. So, it makes sense why you would do New Game Plus without spoiling anything. But the New Game Plus ending is expanded. So, but it's, then there are minor changes in the gameplay. I won't say for, not that it's necessarily spoilers, but if like you want to come across them, but I watched like a video of like all the different changes, and it kind of like it showed like comparisons to like, this is how it plays out. It's not like major, it's just minor stuff that like, if you're nerdy for that story, you're like, yo, this is different. But yeah, I kind of just watched like, okay, what happens at the end? And there you go. And then, so I'd say just do that. Cause yeah, there will be two pieces of DLC for that eventually. But yeah, cause my concern was like, oh, cause my biggest complaint for that game was the ending. But everything else was like, I really enjoyed. But that's a good game. You should definitely play that. Yeah, I haven't played too much else. Just more Death Stranding. I haven't played too much Factorio. But just basically just Death Stranding. I was hoping to play Tomb Raider
before.
I feel
like I missed at some point, but what caused you to go back to Death Stranding?
Like just watching the Death Stranding 2 trailer like 50,000 times. So
I was going to say, is it just that you got nostalgic after watching the trailer and got excited?
Well, because I was like, yeah, I was like, oh, it was on, the director's cut was on sale on a PC. And I was like, you know what? I never did do that extra mission. It's like, I kind of want to go back, start fresh on a new platform and just give a shot and just replay it. Cause I'm like, yeah, it'd be fun to replay. Cause I did really like Death Stranding. I want something that's really, that's a game you should play too. I think you'd really like Death Stranding. cause what I love about that gameplay loop too is like, I love that the first time cause shared objects only show up in areas where you connect the chiral network, which involves hooking a prepper or someone else's big station up to the network. And then after that, all stuff. So it's like, what I love about that loop is the first time you go somewhere, it's all on you. So you have to get there on your own. You can build whatever you want. You can't build objects without the network, but you can do like, you know, anchor points, ladders, and stuff like that to help you get across. You can use vehicles if you find one. But it's all on you to get there. So the first time you go to a place is the most difficult. And then the reward for hooking them up to the network is now you can build stuff to make it easier on all subsequent deliveries to that location. Because not every location you have to go back to multiple times, but typically it's like if you find someone, like there's an engineer, it's like, oh, as you rank up the engineer by making more deliveries to them, you get better, you know, whatever they make, you get better versions of that. They make the exo legs, I believe. They like help you carry more materials. You also don't have to balance as much. You get like 2x carrying capacity. It's easier to balance. And you get them like right away once you get out of the prologue area. So like leveling them up gives you like, oh, here's a level 2 exoskeleton. And then like, here's level 3. So it's like, it incentivizes you to level them up, or like the people that give you weapons or other materials. It's like, oh, you're always incentivized to kind of like, especially because like typically you're never delivering to them directly. It's always like, oh, I'm going really far. Let's pick up some orders that I can take on the way to drop off to other people going down there. Plus, it's like when you level people up, you get more resources that you can take from them, so you can claim materials. Like when I rebuilt the roads, like that's what I do. I'm like, oh, I go to all the major hubs, claim materials, and then go back, build the roads, and then I'd make deliveries to level them up. And then, because that's also part of the trophy, the platinum, you want to do that anyways. So, and it's, I love just, again, that loop of going to a place for the first time, there's nothing there, and then the network coming online on PC, and it's just like, here's all the helpful objects players have put around. It's so cool. I love that. That loop is just so much fun. There's a bit I forgot to talk about. So there's like a part in kind of early on, I guess, in the game where like the Higgs character is like the bad guy, Troy Baker. He disguises himself as like a member at this Lake Knot City. He's like, oh, Sam, I need you to make a delivery for me. Yeah, like you clearly can tell it's Troy Baker, but he's kind of like obscuring his face a little bit with a hat and whatnot. And he gives you a package. But the package says it's a thermonuclear bomb. And so he's trying to set you up to deliver this bomb to a location.
And you're just like, dude, this is a bomb.
Like, it says a bomb on the pad. It says it on the package. It says, if it takes too much damage or Sam is too far from the bomb, it'll trigger. So, like, I was trying to, like, break it. And I was like, I'll just throw it and run away. And, like, it blows up and the game over. So it goes back. But, like, it tells you it's a bomb. So it's like, okay. So I guess it's like, all you can do is just try to go deliver it. But then eventually they kind of tell you it's a, you know, someone... Another character comes in and tells you, like, warns you about the package. I knew it was a bomb, so I took, there's like a giant tar pit area where there was a previous void out, which is what happens, like, if you get killed by the BTs, or you just die in general and your body doesn't get disposed. So I, like, threw it in the tar, and that takes care of it. So, but it's in the character's like, so glad you took care of it. I'm like, yeah, it's because I played the game already. I knew what to do. But yeah, that's just so funny.
It says it's a bomb, and I took care of it.
Yeah. Then there's, like, a funny bit where, like, I was taking a truck to this, there's like this weather station. It's kind of annoying to get to, especially if you don't have the roads built. And it was so funny because I took a truck, and there's like, on the way to the weather station, there's like a bunch of BTs, and I was in my truck, and when the BTs first come around, they mess with like electronics, so your vehicles will just stop and take a sec to reboot. And so I was like, my vehicle stops, I'm like, okay, I can make it, I just running. But then like I'm just gunning it through like these obstacles, and then I just like head on into a BT, and then all of a sudden like the BT like oil surrounds the vehicle. I'm like, no, it's like, and the same thing happened to me in one of the first time I played it, where I just like, I tried to do the same thing in that section where I just take a truck, but it doesn't work. And I still love how like when you get into a BT fight, I love how the environment just changes. Like the black oil just rises up, buildings spawn out of nowhere, and then it's just like you're just doing this massive fight against a BT monster. It's so cool. And then just, it is tough when I don't have any weapons, but then like you can call out, and then like these characters will pop up and like help you and throw you items. Like it's, the idea is that other versions of Sam are doing it anyways, but those are always fun. I love the BT fights. I still try to avoid them like crazy. Cause I'm like, I don't, especially if I don't have the gear, but they're fun to do. And then I guess I never noticed it, but like when you make a gun in that game, and you craft a gun, it comes in like a package because you have to carry it on your back. But if you use it, he breaks the package and the gun, you know, folds up into whatever gun it is. And when you put it to the side, you carry it in like this holster. But the grenades, when you make grenades, they're the same thing. They come in a box and there's like five grenades. But I never noticed that when Sam has the box like on his suit, you know, his... either shoulder, wherever he's carrying it, he reaches back and grabs a grenade from inside the box. Like there's a flap, and he just reaches up into it, grabs a grenade out. Like it's a can of, like a box of soda. And I was like, I never noticed it before. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. So it's just fun little details I never paid attention to. But yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I really like playing that game. I did the second big fight against Mads Mikkelsen. And that's like, it's the World War II. Man, I wish they would make just a World War One or World War II game with the Decima engine, because it's so fun. And I love those kind of games. And like it just looks so good, especially that World War One with all the tanks going by, the planes in the sky. Even the World War II section is so cool. And there's just all the skeleton soldiers everywhere, and they're phasing in and out, and the tanks are phasing out.
I mean, awesome. The vibe of that game is really cool.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think you would really, because you're doing, it's the hiking sim, essentially, like in certain places, and it's just the environments are so beautiful and they're so varied. Also, I think you'd love it.
I think my playstyle, I am willing to sacrifice a lot. So I'm not saying the story's bad in the game, but I think that the main critiques of Death Stranding usually revolved around not understanding the story. And I think that the high points of that game, I would be much more lenient with the story. And it could be good still. Just saying, it, like, the vibe of that game is definitely up my alley.
Yeah, and you could, I mean, if there's so much, like, there is a lot of dialogue early on with Die Hardman talking a lot, but you can always just, like, hit X and he'll stop and you just read the subtitles real quick and just skip through it so you don't have to wait and listen to him talk to you, which is what I've been doing because I'm like, okay, I played this game already. The cutscenes I don't skip because I like watching them. But yeah, it's just, it's the gameplay is like the high point. And then I do like the story, but yeah, it's like it's really just the game that you want to play. It's like, it's just that loop is just so fun, being like, okay, dealing with the timefall, destroying your packages and being like, okay, you know, make sure I have some repair spray. But then it's like, you can only repair packages, and it's the timefall doesn't destroy the materials inside what you're delivering. It just destroys the container to where then if like you were to drop them, like you could fall, like let's say you're going down a steep hill and it's like, you could hold L2 and R2 to get to like kind of brace your straps, like on your carrying pack. You slow down because now you're kind of like bracing for the terrain. But if you weren't holding that and like Sam starts to slip, it's like, oh, hit L2, R2. And if you don't do that, he'll fall and all the packages will fall off him and take damage. So if the containers are already destroyed, then the contents inside will take damage and you get a lesser grade when you go to make your deliveries. So it's like, that's the incentive for not doing that. And again, you can repair them with repair spray, but your equipment that you carry on your back can't be repaired. So like and the worst is the snow mount. Cause like for some reason, the timefall snow just like destroys, because also you're trudging so slow through the snow. Initially it's like, all my guns and my equipment are being wrecked by this timefall. But then once you get everything up and running, then it's like, okay, build up your portable printer and you're just putting zip lines up. And we're like, I love the zip lines. The one thing I haven't tried yet, is one of the new items they added for the director's cut was a cargo launcher, which I guess the idea there is like, okay, I could put the cargo launcher and load it and fire cargo that will safely land in a further location, so I don't have to carry it. So if like I come across, like maybe it's like, oh, I keep the PCC on me for like I want to build a zip line or a timefall shelter or a recharge station, stuff that's really useful for other players and yourself. And it's like, oh, there's a lot of stuff here. Like maybe it's materials like ceramics, metal and whatnot, stuff you need to build items or repair the roads. And it's like, I want to get this stuff, but I can't carry it because if I do, I'm either at capacity or it's too much. There is still a height limit. Even if stuff's lightweight, you can only stack so high in your character on a Sam's back. It's like, okay, so maybe you build the catapult, face it towards a distro center or a location where you can put that material and then fire it all up. But I don't know what the range of that is. Like the range of the zip lines is like 300 to 330 meters between those points. It's like, okay, you know how far apart they can be, but I don't know how far the catapults can the package catapults can shoot. Cause like, if they could shoot super far, then I'm like, oh, these are way useful. Cause you can be like, there's a ton of stuff over here. I want to get it, put it in the launcher and just throw it back. But I don't know. Again, I don't know how, I guess there are some parts early on in the game or in the main part of the map that could be useful. Cause usually you can find that's the one thing I like too, is like the game will oftentimes spawn in random stuff. Like when you go, it's like, oh, you can find materials, which you need, and you can choose to pick up or not. You can find lost cargo, which you deliver to the people that they need to go to, or you can entrust them to other players. You don't get as many points for doing that, but you usually get like about a third of what you would get. Like if you drop this off, you get 100 likes, but if you entrust it to someone else, you can get like 30. That goes to your rankings and whatnot. But yeah, I haven't used that material, but yeah, that game is just, it's so fun.
I think the biggest selling point of that game is just the screenshot mode that came out, or the photo mode that came out, because man, it just, everything I see from that, I'm like, yeah, this is gorgeous.
Yeah, if you just follow you don't have Twitter, but if you were to follow Hydea, like that's like when I wake up in the morning, it's like overnight, it's just him retweeting screenshots from Death Stranding. Like, I love, like, I wish I had, like, there's this one channel, I forget what they're called, but they've been recently, they review photo modes from video games.
Sure.
And they, and really good stuff. Like, they were, the one for Ratchet & Clank's photo mode is, like, really good because you can put in multiple light sources, which is really cool. You can't do that in a lot of other games. And he, like, reviewed, like, oh, like, because a lot of games is very basic. Like, it's typically always the same stuff, yada, yada. That's why Ratchet & Clank really stood out. But I was like, man, I wish this guy had a channel back when Death Stranding first got the photo mode, because it came out before Director's Cut. It was like a pat, it got patched in later. But yeah, I wish, like, I'd love to just take like a, like, we're essentially taking a photography class, but for virtual photography. Yeah, because I tried looking, like, does anybody have like an idea? Like, oh, because sometimes they see shots, I'm like, how do you do this shot? And I wish some people, more people do, like, here's the shot, here's how I set up. Because I love that kind of shit. Like, I've seen some, like, that's how he does it. He'll be like, oh, he'll show you a photo, he'll kind of run through the features of the stuff, and then he'll take a shot, and you see that whole step of how he set it up. It's like, okay, I get it. But yeah, that game is really good. I think you'd really like it. And it goes on sale all the time, too. But
it's free it multiple times.
Yeah, Death Stranding was part of the PlayStation Plus free games for when you bought a PS5.
I own it or have some version of it already, and or it was free and downloaded it. I'm pretty sure I have something.
The base game was free on PlayStation Plus for PS5, but Director's Cut, I would say if you can get that, because it has the widescreen mode. What you could do, I don't remember if you can upgrade, because I remember there was that thing where like a lot of games would be like, oh, if you have the game on PS4, you can upgrade to PS5 for $10, like Last of Us Remake, or Last of Us Part 2.
Yeah,
Remake.
But I don't think you can do that with the free ones. I think that was the whole shtick.
I don't think you can do that. So I think if you have Death Stranding from the PlayStation Plus PS5 games, I don't think you can do that. Because I would suggest getting the Director's Cut on PS5, because again, the widescreen mode is just super cool. If you have a big TV and you're already playing on, then you just put on widescreen. I love, just again, because that environment is just so good. But yeah, I really think you'd enjoy that game a lot, just because it's so often you talk about just want to relax, and I feel like outside, sure, the BTs and the Timefall stuff that can make you
pack. You need some elements of a game to still build tension. When I say I like relaxing games sometimes and things like that, like, I definitely still enjoy games like Demon's Souls and Bloodborne, obviously, and a game needs tension at some point. I guess it doesn't need it. Like, you could play things like Animal Crossing, but I like games that still do have some tension as well.
And it's just so fun, too, like, when you build stuff and when you log in, like, the next day, and it tells you, like, all the upvotes you get, like, all the likes you get from people using your stuff. Like, if someone uses your object, you default get one. But if you get more, that means they manually did, like, hey, I like this object, let's give it some extra likes. But, like, or seeing that people contributed to, like, a section of the road. I wish I could tell, and that's something I don't know if anybody looked up, but I'm curious, like, when it tells me, like, hey, so-and-so player contributed materials to this section of the road, I don't know how much that counts. Like, if I put 1,000 metal to a road section, what ratio of that goes to other players? Is it 1-to-1? Is it, you know, 0.5-to-1? Like, I'm curious what that ratio is. I guess you wouldn't say point, usually like 4-to-1, but
yeah.
And I tried to check the other day where it's like, I looked on the map at each of a couple of them. And I was like, okay, if in the next couple minutes it tells me someone donated, then I'll just do a flashback recording and then go back and look. But yeah, because I did notice, like, and I don't know if it's new to the Director's Cut, but there's like a section of the road that goes to the mountain pass, which I don't remember from the base game at all. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to add it here because, one, you spend a good amount of time in that section, but I'm like, I like using the zip line, so I put zip lines up. So I'm not going to waste time donating to the road. But there is one section of it that did show up randomly for me. So I'm like, I guess I was active enough in the area that people had donated to that road. And I'm curious too, like, is it, like, I'm not sure how the server instances work. Like, okay, someone liked your stuff, that means it's an active player. But if it says so-and-so contributed, did they do it actively? Or is it like, I'm on that server where that player played, and over time, as you play the game, it doles out resources to your highway that player already did in their playthrough. You just have that kind of connection.
Basically, did they actively like it enough to spend time doing something to it, or was it just kind of a passive background thing?
Well, like let's say you played Death Stranding. Let's say you played on PC. So then it's like, oh, JCM Daddy, if we did a strand connection to each other, so we'd be like, okay, we know each other. Let's do that, and we do like a strand connection in that game. That means that player's objects are
we're moving
higher.
A little fast for a strand connection.
Yes, sorry. I'll take you to dinner first. Yeah. No, it's like my objects are more likely to populate your world. And so she's like, oh, this person's stuff is in really good spots. It's very useful. I want to make a strand contract with them so I see more of their stuff because they seem to be putting them in better spots. You could do that kind of thing. So I'm curious if it's like, will it tell you like, hey, Jason Daddy contributed to that road. I'm not an active player, but I did do that at one point. And then over time, it's kind of like a time frame, like, okay, you've played for X amount of time. Will, because other players in their games have done this, it has a record of it on the server, will have that contribute to you as if they're not really active. It's just like a passive in the past kind of active thing, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I'm curious how that works, but there's no real way to, I guess, test it unless you ask them. But I don't know if they've talked about that in any sort of stuff. But yeah, it just makes me really excited for the second one because I love that. Again, the gameplay loop of going someplace for the first time off the grid, it's up to you. You only get a rope and an anchor.
That's a pretty cool gameplay loop. It really is a game based around like survival exploration and like a creepy world.
Yeah, I love it. I'm so aggressive now. Like typically in the past, I used to like avoid BTs a lot, but I'm like, nah, give me grenades, give me the guns with the blood ammo. I'm like, I'm all about taking out. And there's this, what I love about the mountain section too, is there's a bit where like BB get sick, so you don't have BB with you, so you can't detect BTs as well. Like that's what the BBs are for. So you can know they're around and you can hear them, but you don't know they're there until you're right up on them. And they do kind of make a noise because they're like invisible, and they do like make a noise, so you can hear like, oh, I hear them in the area, and the game still kind of gives you that feedback if you know they're here. So it's like, but you get the ability of from the story where you can use your. You have like this cuff and you can use it to like cut the umbilical cords that kind of tie them to this realm essentially. So if you can sneak up on them, you can cut that cord and then that kills them. But like, so I was like sneaking through the section. I was like, oh, I don't have my BB. And it's like, I hear them, but I wasn't using my surround sound headphones. I was using like just some earbuds because long story. And then it's like all of a sudden the prompt to cut the cord just popped up on my screen. I was like, oh my God, I like quickly hit it. Cause I didn't realize I was that close to a BT. And like when it cuts it, you can see the trail to where the BT was. It was like right there. I'm like, oh my God, I could have got attacked there. And it is fun. Like at one point I was like, okay, there's BTs around. I have the gun.
Are they all hostile? The BTs?
If they hear you or you're loud. Yeah, they will either start searching for you or go just beeline it towards you. Like they want to get you. Okay. So like they're now when you initially like, oh, you're in a BT area. Okay. You kind of crouch and you can get pretty close, like really close actually. And then you do have a prompt to like hold your breath so they can't hear you. And there's some sections where, like you want to do that. Cause like you don't want them to start looking for you. But there was a bit where I was like, okay, there's BTs around. I have a gun. The gun has a suppressor so that they won't like attack, but I'll shoot like I'm just gonna shoot my blood bullets in the random spots, see if I can find one, and then I'm like, okay, and then I hit them, but they don't know where the bullet came from, so they start searching for me. But then I'm like, you can see their handprints on the ground when they're doing that. I just threw a grenade, a blood grenade, to like take them out. I'm like, there we go. But it's just a fun loop. And then yeah, when you again, it just incentivizes building structures to make the game easier, and I just love that. It's so good. Yeah, good stuff. Love that game. The thing about my earbuds too, like the ones I was using, they have this feature where, not a feature, but like one of the functionalities of them, typically like a lot of earbuds I bought, if you double tap like the right earbud, that pauses whatever you're listening to if you're watching a video on YouTube. But these earbuds I have, they're newer, and if you tap once on the right, it turns the volume up, and if you tap once on the left, it turns the volume down like one notch. But what's annoying is I use them when I'm working out. And I don't know if it's because my hands are not wet, but maybe a little damp. Like if I actually touch my shirt or my shorts because I'm sweating or whatever. And I go to like double tap to pause like the YouTube video I'm watching when I'm doing my sets. and I like, I'll double tap, but the volume just goes up, and I'm like, double tap, and it goes up. I'm like, what? How fast do I have to double tap to get you to pause? And like, and it's annoying because I'm just turning the volume up, so it's getting louder and louder in my ear and becoming uncomfortable. I'm like, stop it, man. I'm like, usually just have to revert to reaching up, reaching over to the mouse and just clicking it to stop the damn video. But it's so frustrating. Or like the worst is when it's paused and I go to double tap and it's not unpausing. I just keep turning the volume up and I'm not paying attention. And then it finally unpauses, but it's really loud. I'm like, come on, earbuds, stop doing that. Annoying stuff like that.
God, I was thinking whenever I need a game to play or I'm in the void, I should just like message you and text you and you can just tell me what to play.
Like I said, man, we got enough to play. It's just,
I know. Just tell me.
Just play Death Stranding. I'd say if you play Death Stranding, just get a date where you get past the tutorial area. Like it's, I mean, that game's very front heavy with story when it starts, but just get, I mean, the tutorial area is not bad. Like it's a good area. It's just, you want to get out of it because then that's when you get more stuff that makes your life easier. Like, again, the very first delivery you do once you get to the mainland is to the guy, the engineer that gives you the exoskeleton. So it's like, you want to do that. And there's different versions of exoskeleton you get to. I don't use them. I just like using the power ones. Like there's ones for like speed, so you can like run super fast, but you can only carry whatever the Sam's max carrying weight is, like 150 kilograms.
I think my favorite Death Stranding story is the pizza one when you have to deliver a pizza and how if you put it twice. On its side or like upside down or something. You don't get some reward, I guess. And it's like, well, yeah it's a pizza.
You fail. Yeah. And they tell you, like, Die Hardman's like, Sam, you gotta be careful of that package. Yeah. Cause the game has this feature like when you pick up stuff off the ground, you just throw it on your back. You can carry it in hand if you want. It's kind of a waste. So you pick it up on your back. But if you take orders from a terminal, it has the option to auto arrange. And usually you hit that, you hold triangle, auto arranges, which helps. It puts all the heavy stuff on the bottom, all the light stuff on top, and then puts certain stuff on your suit, on your outfit, depending on what you have available. And like that makes it to where when you're walking, you don't have balance issues. Like if you put all the heavy shit on top, it's like Sam's going to lean to the right. It's like, hold L2. Okay. Oh, Sam's leaning to the left. Hold R2, to balance yourself. But then if you do that with the pizza, it's like, okay, maybe it puts the pizza in a bad spot. Don't do that. It's like, don't manually put the pizza in a bad location. But and then, yeah, when you get a truck, when you find trucks in that game, it's so good because trucks can hold so much materials. And it's like, load that baby up and just drive around. It's so fun when you're rebuilding the roads, just making deliveries. But yeah.
Do you still like the gameplay loop in that game once you get more equipment and traversal becomes easier? Or I think that one of the problems I generally have with survival games is there's some turning point where you've gotten enough equipment and gear that traversal isn't scary anymore. Like you get to a point where you're pretty much safe wherever and the game loses some of its appeal at that point to me. Does that happen in Death Stranding for you?
No, because I like I said, the first time you go somewhere, you have to do it with only the only gear that helps you is the ladder and the anchor. So it's like, because you have to do everything once without assistance, you can get that, that thrill. Like that's the challenge. And then the reward is bringing the chiral network online, seeing other players' objects, and then expanding. Like the zip lines, I love the zip lines, and I put them all over the snow mountain area because it just takes so long to trudge that snow. And then there's like the timefall is just ruining your stuff. So it's like, I love it. And then it's also like, because some of the locations you make orders to in that mountain region are pretty close, it's like, yo, just put up a couple zip lines. And then like, if I have to go back and forth between places, I'm like, I don't mind just taking this. Plus it's like, you get a great view when you're just, Sam's just riding that zip line up to the, wherever he's going. And you just look around you and stuff. You can dodge all. I mean, the trade-off too is like, you can see materials or lost cargo below you that it's like, oh, maybe I need more metals. I need chemicals. I need ceramics. Like,
is that from other players or is that just materials and things that are populating the world?
It just, you can tell the difference between them. Like if they're blue, it's just populated randomly. And the majority of the stuff you find is that if it's green, like it has a name, it'll also have the name of the person that dropped it. And it'll say like lost cargo and the player's name. So you can pick up that cargo and return it to the player. Like if the players lose stuff, you can find their stuff, or you can just take it for yourself if you want. And so it's like the it's, again, it's like a reward of, and you don't have to do it if you don't want to. You can just like not build that stuff. But it's like, you have to have, if you want to, if I want to build a zip line, I have to travel to the spot I want the zip line to go. So it's like, I make the trek to the prepper I need to put them on the network. Like I did one for the other day. It was like the, it was like a scientist or something. And it's like, okay, I get them up and running. Now the network's online. Okay, well, I need to have, I need to make a couple of the level 2 portable printers. I have to walk and find the exact location I want to put the zip line because I need line of sight. And they can only be about 300 something meters away from each other. So it's like, it's, I get there once on my own. And then it's this, again, now it's planning of where do I want to put these zip lines to help me get around. Because yeah, like the road you build, like it makes deliver, once you build that road, especially from Lake Knot down to the Timefall farm, which is the most south region, like that makes a lot of that super easy. But that's your reward because you had to work to get those materials to build that road. Like the road's not cheap. Like it costs a lot. So like every, and some sections are like really small towards like you build it. And it's like, the fuck did I build this for? It's like it ends in the air. So I can't even use it. It's not like it's on the ground. So I can just get off the road when it ends. Like this section is useless, but it's like, you need to build it in order to complete the thing. And like, again, that's the reward. Cause now it's like, oh, I can, the gameplay loop then is, do I want to build the rest of the roads? Let's hit up all the distro centers, claim all the metal and ceramics I can, and then go down and build the next section. And it's just, I love doing that. And then when you're also on the roads, you don't consume battery. So it's like, even if you use them just to walk and not use the car, then you don't drain your exoskeleton. So it like, keeps the battery going, and you can dodge certain like BT sections or not worry about the mules, which are like the enemy porters, human characters that are addicted to delivery. But it's just, again, I don't feel it detracts. I feel like it's the reward. Like if you want to do that, I feel like it's just fun to do. Cause then it's like, okay, I can just do rapid deliveries, especially if you want to get the platinum. Like when I was playing on PS4, like that was my thought too. It was like, I need to make getting to each of these locations as easy as possible. Because if I want the platinum, I have to get everybody to 5 stars, which requires deliveries. And like, if I could just quick do this, then I'm good.
Sorry, did you say people are addicted to deliveries?
So there are characters, yeah. Some of the bad humans you find are called mules, and they're they're addicted to that like dopamine hit of making the delivery, and they just got so consumed by it that now they're just, when they find packages, they're just all about taking the packages. So, like they're, when you cross into the area, they'll try to like get your stuff and take you out. Just so they could take your gear. And there are some missions where it's like, hey, they stole my thing. Can you go into their base and steal it back? You can't kill the human enemies, because if you do, you have to dispose of the bodies so they don't cause a void out. So you only have like 2 days to do that or something like that. But yeah, they're just like, there's a whole like lore email thing you can read about it, where like they tell about mules and their addiction. It's just so funny to me that like they just got so addicted to it. And I'm like, am I the mule? Because I love making deliveries, man. But yeah, it's just a fun game.
Yeah, you're what they're talking about.
Yep. And then yeah, I have some random stuff here, but like, man, I was using, so I got like a new, finally got my new work laptop set up. So I was getting everything done, yada, yada. And then I was like, I was using it the other day finally and like full. And I was like, man, my main monitor is just super laggy. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And like for a long time, I was like, I thought like there's just some weird issue. And then I realized later that I didn't think about it at first, but like for some reason when it hooked up, the new laptop defaulted to 4K when I first set it up. So I put it down to 1080p. So like, I don't need you at 4K, but it put the refresh rate of the monitor at 30 Hertz. And I was like, instead of 60 as default. And I was like, that's why it was so laggy and it's driving me crazy. I'm like, come on, man, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? I was like, glad I didn't submit a ticket to IT to be like, yo, why is it so laggy?
So that they don't treat you like shit.
What are you, idiot, man?
Try turning it off. Yeah.
It just takes so long because we've outsourced, like, unless it's like a local application to your site, you don't reach out to on-site IT. You have to send it to the global help desk. And it's just so slow because they outsource it too to like, you know, overseas places. And it's just like, it takes so long because they're not in the same time zone. I get like messages like 5 a.m. like, hey, you there? And then I don't get it until hours later. And I'm like, I'm here. And it's like, it's just coordinating getting my new laptop set up was such a pain in the ass, man. Because I'm like, when I used to just reach out to IT on site, things got done so much quicker. And like, but that's not the procedure anymore. It's just so frustrating. And I got my kid being radicalized by YouTube because like I
what?
So I my youngest was like, I was in the bathroom and the wife was out. So I was like, okay, I gotta keep the door open so I can keep an eye on him. And he'll usually always want to hang out. And he's like playing with like a toy or whatever. And he starts spinning the toilet paper roll. And so all the toilet paper is coming down off the roll. And so like I took the roll and I flipped it around, you know, because unlike cats, like that'll work because he could still only spin it the one way. He's not going to spin it from under because he doesn't know how to do that. So like, okay, if I put it this way and he spins it, it won't unfold. But now it's backwards. So then my kid's like, oh, put the toilet paper backwards. You can't put it backwards. You put it backwards like this. You're crazy. I'm like, the only place you could have learned that was from YouTube. So,
dude, that's got to be so weird.
It is. It's funny because they're like, he'll say stuff like he learned about sus like a long time ago, but then he'll know like memes, but he doesn't know the meaning of them. Like he'll be like, you know, I forget. It doesn't always pop up, you know, like 69. Nice. Like he doesn't know what that means. And like, it's just little memes and stuff like that. It's he'll know, or he'll do like Orange Justice or some random dance, but it's, you know, it is kind of funny.
Fucking kids, man.
Which is fine. You know, it's this, he's just watching YouTubers and it's like, they're, sure. I watch YouTubers. It's totally, totally good. But it is funny. It's like this day. I mean, I was, you know, people quoted TV shows and shit and stuff like that as the thing, but now they're just quoting the YouTubers that they watch. So it's not that different.
I mean, it's probably not more or less any different than like anything else. You could make an argument that social media in general probably is, but internet and YouTube in general, probably not.
Yeah. Like how many kids were being like, did I do that? You know, like back in the day, like, you know, it's the same shit. You know, instead of the catchphrases from the popular sitcom, it's catchphrases from the YouTuber. It's fine. I'm seeing what other, yeah, I had some other notes here, but I got to save them for further. I bought a food tracker app called Macro Factor. I've been using MyFitnessPal since like 2012 and they limited some stuff behind a paywall, like the ability to scan barcodes a while back, which is the dumbest thing ever. But, Jeff Nippard, who's a popular, fitness person on social media, he's got a big YouTube channel. He has some fitness programs. He created this app called Macro Factor, which has a lot of features I really like. I've been using it since the start of the year. I'll probably talk about it more in full and give my thoughts on it after a couple more months, but it's just a really nice app.
Yeah, now I'm curious because I stopped using MyFitnessPal tracking my nutrition entirely when the barcode scanning went away because it just got to be too much of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, luckily I like... a lot of stuff I had because I used it for so long. It's like, unless there's something new, like at least the benefit is like almost everything is in it. So I can just type in what the item is with the brand and you're good to go. I don't have to scan it. But I was like, you know, I'll try Macro Factor because what it does too, you know, I'll kind of talk about some of the features I'm not reviewing right now. It's like, you can put in like, it'll track your, you know, you track your weight. So you can put in your weight every day if you want, or you don't have to do it every day. I like doing it every day just because I want to try it out, and it'll show you like your actuals, but it also shows you like the trend. Cause obviously you'll fluctuate, you know, based on water and whatnot and, food, when you consumed your food and what have you. And then it'll make suggestions on that. So be like, okay, we think if you want to lose weight, you should be eating around this, but because you're tracking, it'll make adjustments every week. Like, oh, based on how you performed last week and how much you ate, either you ate at what they said, or you were kind of up or down, what have you, it'll suggest like, maybe you should go up a couple calories, you go down a couple calories. So I like that it's like constantly doing those adjustments every week and keeping track of your goals. And then it does have it again, it is paid. So it does have the scan, but it also has a feature where you can just, if there's no barcode or if you didn't want to scan the barcode, you could just scan the nutrition label and it just pulls all the data off the nutrition label, like the protein, calories, carbs, all that stuff. So you don't even have to scan the food, you could just scan the label and be like, add it in there. But yeah, it is a really nice app. I like using it. Again, the features it has over MyFitnessPal do make it more fun. I'll probably make the transition at some point to just using this and stop using MyFitnessPal. The only thing is that my work has a what's it called?
Oh, like a health stipend or benefit?
Yeah, I'm trying to cast light. Where it's like, yeah, you can hook things up to it. And one of the things it can track is my Fitness Pal. So you can hook it up, and every day you complete a food log, you get like a couple points. And then over the course of the year, you can spend those points on stuff. I usually just spend them on gift cards. And because I only use my Fitness Pal, is the only thing I have it tracking on there. It's like, I always get like the max amount you can cash out like halfway through the year. So I'm like, okay, well, unless Macro Factor gets added, I'll still add stuff into my Fitness Pal just to make sure I get those points, because I want those. I want that free money, man. just for logging. Super easy. So that's the only thing really stopped me from just quitting doing my Fitness Pal in full. But yeah, I really like Macro Factor. I'll give a full review on it later. But yeah, just the tracking it does, the trend line, the adjustments every week when you check in, be like, hey, and it's like, even if it makes a suggestion, like, hey, we think you should go up or down. Like the one thing it won't, cause like on Fitness Pal, like if I was tracking, you typically would want to track your strength, any sort of fitness stuff you do. So it's like, oh, track your cardio. Like if you do cardio, you did 10 minutes, you know, it kind of had a default, like you can hook up your Apple, yeah, like an Apple Watch or something. You can hook up like your health information there, and it'll pull like whatever the Apple Watch, you know, guesstimates that you burn doing like cardio. It'll put into my Fitness Pal and be like, okay, you did this. That was 200 calories. So we took 200 calories off of your daily requirement. So it's like, okay, it tracks it there, but that doesn't, you don't have to do any fitness tracking in the thing. You can tell it like, hey, I work out on average about this much a week. It'll make the initial guesstimate. And then it's just like, you just do your exercises. And then it's like, it, because you're tracking your weight and what have you, it'll know like, hey, we think, you know, you're probably burning more than the average person would doing, you know, your exercise. So maybe you should eat more calories, or you eat less because you're not burning as much, or you didn't do as much last week or have. So it's really, I like how it does that. I don't have to track all that kind of stuff in there. Additionally, on top of, I mean, not that I was really doing that much for, the only thing I ever tracked in my Fitness Pal was cardio. I never put in strength training because I just told it like, oh yeah, on average I work out this much, just to make it easier. But yeah, I like Macro Factor. Again, it is a paid app. I think you have to, it's a subscription. You can't just unlock it at once.
I was just going to ask if it was subscription or one time.
Yeah, it's a subscription. It's not a one time. Yeah, which is fine, you know, because they keep updating. It keeps getting updates. It's been out for a while, so I waited. But I figured, you know what, they have a lot of updates. And I think there was like they had a promo for it coming up on the start of the year. So I was like, I'll give it a try. I'll just pay for a year and, you know, give it a shot, see how I like it. But so far, yeah, I'm really liking it. I think it's a good, really good app. I think if I were to combine this with like, for a while there, I was using, I talked about it, but the RP Hypertrophy app was really good. I really liked that app too, because it was very much like just tracking, made tracking your workouts super easy, and it made like smart adjustments, and it was just really good. Really good app there. It was a paid app, so I did a couple months of that to try it out. I liked it a lot, but I'm like, okay, I know what I do and yada yada, so I think there's like a bit there where I, because everybody in the family is getting sick and this and that, it's like it was really beneficial. So I'm like, okay, I'll just stop paying for it for a while and just go back to tracking manually, which is fine. But yeah, probably I'll talk about Macro Factor more in the future once I get a couple more months under it. Probably put up a review or something. But all right, well, go ahead and call it there. Had some good conversations. Hopefully you start playing something. You know?
I know. I need to play something. I'll try the DLC. I mean, I played Rogue Legacy, and like I said, I was enjoying that, and I loved Super Mario RPG. Now I'm like blanking on if there was a Nintendo game coming out. I need to check. I have a giant list of like when games come out and which ones I'm interested in, and I'm like, I need to go back to that list and see what's actually happening.
For sure. Yeah, definitely go check it out. Yeah, the Burning Shores DLC would be good, because you can beat that pretty quick. It's not a long DLC, plus it looks great on the new cloud tech. Looks really good. Flying around on the Sunwing is fun. Good DLC. That'll be fun. All right, well, we'll go ahead and call it there. So thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Izzy, for joining.
Yep.
And we'll see you all next time.
Later.